Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is sponsored in part by Prince Associates, Send in the Clowns, the Phoenix Tube Company, CelebrityTrips.com, the law firm of Decalator Cohen and DePrisco, Solomon Jewelers, and Relish Restaurant of Kings Park. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
So joining us on the phone is the television play-by-play announcer for the Carolina Hurricanes. He's been with the team since 1991 when the team was the Hartford Whalers. He's been calling the game since 1995. He began with the American Hockey League Springfield Indians where, if I'm not mistaken, he got to see future coaches Bruce Boudreau, Jack Capuano, and a future broadcast partner, Darryl Ray, play as from 1984 to 1991. He handled the play's television and radio broadcasts. Nationally, he has served as play-by-play announcer for the ESPN's National Night, NHL on Versus, NBCSN, NBC Sports, and has called ACC and SEC basketball for Fox Sportsnet. To borrow one of his phrases, if you're a hockey fan, sit back and enjoy this one. It's a pleasure to welcome John Forslund to WLIE Sports Talk New York. Welcome, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good. We were hoping to have Dave Maloney with you. We'll have to do Dave separately. Little bugs today for some reason with the switchboard. John, when you're broadcasting a game like yesterday, can you sense the momentum swing in a game?
Usually, yes. But this series has been difficult. This series, it defies the reality of what you might be looking at, really. I mean, it's hard to make a read here. I without question believe the Rangers are the better team. Through four games, I thought they showed that for the lion's share of it. I thought they got off to that wonderful start yesterday. They were going to get to their game. But I think the problem here is that when you break down and you're not complete, and whether it be, you know, managing the puck, whether you come off your discipline just a little bit, or if you're not physical enough, you feed right into Ottawa. And Guy Boucher has done a remarkable job with this team. As you know, I think that you watch them, and they're really interchangeable. All their players are, with the exception of Erik Karlsson, who's a world-class talent and can dictate the game, and the goaltender who can get hot. The rest of their players are pretty much the same. They're all very good. They don't have a lot of guys that are, you know, going to blow your doors off, but they're fundamentally sound. So what I mean by all of this is that the Rangers at times have played right into that. So if you misplay the puck, if you're out of position, Ottawa never is. And they take advantage of all of that, and they earn their bounces. They earn their right back into games. And that's what I think we've seen here for five games now as we look forward to Tuesday night.
Now, you grew up in Springfield, Massachusetts, and most likely you were watching when Bobby Orr scored that famous overtime goal to beat the St. Louis Blues. Jimmy Vesey's goal had that feel to it. I'm wondering if Fred Cusack, who was a longtime play-by-play announcer for our younger audience out there, had to deal with coach's challenge, if his calls would have been the same. You look at yesterday's game, the Vesey goal, the Gartner overtime goal, the Grabner overtime goal. And the game winner all went to review. Has that changed the way you announce games?
No, I basically go off my feel. So, you know, from my vantage point, I think from everybody's vantage point on VZ's goal, it looked like a miraculous save, which it was. And then you get the angles, and you see that his catching glove is behind the goal line, and the puck completely crosses. And thank goodness we have the review, because if you go back in time and you just had a goal judge, you know, flipping the red light on, I'm not sure he sees the puck. And if he doesn't see the puck, and the referee doesn't see the puck back in those days, guess what? It's a save. And we'd never know. And the game would have gone on, and who knows what road the game would have gone down. But we all would not have known. So in the perfect world, you know, the review is for plays like that. The challenges have become nauseating at times. They've slowed down games. It's picayune at the blue line on many of these offside plays. I think the league's going to have to really investigate some of that stuff. There is a complete controversy going on right now around the league with what is or what isn't goaltender interference. So that's one that we could be on the air tonight, guys, all night talking about. So those are the things I think they need to clean up. But I basically, to answer your question, go off my feel of what it is in the moment. And then you, you know, wait and wait, and you have a little bit of drama, and then you see what the interpretation is, and then you go from there.
Yeah, speaking of being on the air all night, all we would have to do is call Milan Lucic, and we could spend a week talking about goaltender interference for sure. You mentioned Erik Karlsson. You know, obviously, he's already playing with two hairline fractures in his foot. In Game 4, he collided with Rangers forward Chris Kreider, slammed his heel into the boards, didn't return. Yet, yesterday, he led all skaters with over 31 minutes, had three assists, and was a +3 after being held scoreless in the previous two games, in which he was a -4 in those two games. What, if anything, did you see different in the way he approached his game, or was it the way the Rangers tried to defend him?
It's on the Rangers. The Rangers let this guy off the hook in Game 5, you know, in my opinion. I think they need to pump the puck into his corner. They need to get in there and hit him. They need to wear him down. They need to make his life miserable. And we kind of opened the game up with that. And Joe Micheletti had a package on how the Rangers are in games 3 and 4 were tough on Erik Karlsson, which led to, either a new injury or the aggravation of the old injury, whatever it is. But he's gone from being maybe at 70% at the start of the series to about 50%. But he was able to dictate that game and make that phenomenal diagonal pass there, which led to the tying goal at the end of regulation. So when you look at the way, again, like we started this interview off, this is what I mean. You play into Ottawa's hands if you allow Erik Karlsson to have the puck, if you give him ice, if you allow him to come through the middle, if you allow him to feel the game. And they have to take that away on Tuesday night. They have to make sure they take that away and be aggressive on him without taking penalties. But, you know, just limit his opportunities and try to keep him in check. And that's going to be the key, because you've got a guy here that's broken down a little bit. Why let him off the hook?
Agreed. One of the other things you have to start worrying about if you are a Ranger fan, Kyle Turris, Mike Hoffman, Mark Stone, the top three goal scorers during the regular season. Turris had been held scoreless through the first three games. Hoffman through the first four, and Stone had one goal in the first four games, yet all three of them got on the board yesterday. Is that a trend that should start worrying New York Ranger fans?
Turris has been good. I think, to be fair, I think Turris in many ways, you even look back to Game 4, right? He had the only goal. Look how he stepped out of character at the end to kind of challenge Tanner Glass and get involved in some scrums and a little dust up there at the end of the game. You know, that's not his game, but it is the playoffs, and every player has to do something like that to be effective. So I think he's been effective for them without scoring. Stone's been invisible for the most part, had been invisible down the stretch of the regular season, came to life a little bit in round one. But I thought yesterday was his best game. And he is a sniper. And he's a guy, again, if you allow him to get in the scoring zones, he's tough to handle. He's got a great stick. He's got a great defensive stick. He picks up pucks, you know, on the back track when he's coming out of the zone. He's good at countering with the puck when he does something like that, and he can finish. Hoffman's just a finisher, in my opinion. I think he, again, if you're aggressive on him, you'll keep him to the outside. He's really good on the power play at 13 power play goals in the regular season. But I think he's more of a periphery guy, and you can't allow him to again, get ice. And I think as that game went along yesterday, you look at some of the transitional rushes that Ottawa had, a guy like Mike Hoffman had room to skate. And when the Rangers were at their best in games 3 and 4, that wasn't happening. So they got to get back to that. The Rangers can dictate this thing if they're on point. If they're not, they're going to have a tough time.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking to John Forslund of the NHL on NBC. On the flip side, the Rangers all season long have relied on balanced scoring, with guys like JT Miller and Kevin Hayes being a big part of that. Neither have scored a goal in this series, and Miller at times has made some really mind-numbing giveaways. What have the Sens done to take away those two players? And you know, JT more so than Kevin Hayes. Kevin Hayes has made some nice plays and made some nice passes, but JT Miller has been all but invisible in this series.
Yeah, I agree. I think Hayes was better yesterday. Miller, a little bit of a contribution on that newly created fourth line, but he's supposed to be a top six player, right? Or at least a top nine guy. So, I mean, you expect more out of JT Miller. You saw more in the regular season than that. I think he gets frustrated. I think he gets, off center a little bit. And this is a frustrating team to play against. Remember, there's another team on the other side that's competing really hard and has to be taken seriously. I think that's part of the issue here. I think it's natural, based on the division the Rangers were in, and the record they had and how well they played on the road all season and the personnel they have and the experience they have, I think you can almost look by Ottawa. But Ottawa is that sleeping giant, which is a team that, you know, is in the perfect position. You look at the way Boucher has played all his cards. He's played the underdog card every opportunity he's had to open his mouth. That's the easiest position for any team in the Stanley Cup playoffs to be in. Home ice doesn't matter. It's all about pressure. And if you can turn pressure into your weapon, like you reverse it on the other side, a team like Ottawa, fundamentally sound, with players who are in position, well-coached, pretty good goalie, you can do this. And I think that's what's happened in Miller's game. He gets frustrated within the game. He tries to do too much. He turns the puck over. He's guilty of, you know, coming off his discipline every once in a while. And Vigneault has no choice but to bump him down the pecking order. And that's what we've seen.
You know, you mentioned about home ice, and thus far, home ice has held true throughout. Aside from the crowd, the key component of home ice is the ability to have the last change. What are the key matchups that Guy Boucher and Alain Vigneault have sought to use when they've had the last change, and how much of a factor do you think it's had on this series?
You know what I think the big factor is going into Game 6? Just disregard everything we've already seen. The first goal. I don't think the first goal is always that big of a deal. 15, 20 years ago, it seemed like, you know, 95% of the time, if you scored first, you'd win the game. It turned around a little bit. I think it's important to a degree. It wasn't important in Game 5, but I think at Madison Square Garden in Game 6, that first goal is going to be really important, because then I think, if Ottawa were to score first, they're going to get to their game. And then that's going to be their opportunity to maybe finally dictate a game on defensive terms. The Rangers really haven't seen that, because the Rangers, obviously, in 3 and 4 were flying, dominated the game, came out of the chute in a great way yesterday. So for the last 3 games, they've been ahead of it, and they've led most of the series. So they've had the lead time for the entire series. I think that's the factor. I'm not sure it's a hard matchup series. I really don't. I think, in terms of what we're looking at here, because Boucher is a wizard at mixing line combinations and again having a team where he can move people around, I think he's comfortable no matter what the circumstances are, and of course he's on the road anyway. So I think that's going to be a big part of what we see on Tuesday night.
You know, you just mentioned about how his lineup changes. He's a master at that. And you look at the end of Game 4, which was chippy and ugly, and it seems that Guy Boucher doesn't mind that series going there, inserting Chris Neal into yesterday's game. Were you surprised by that, and how does Neal change the dynamic of the Senators?
Well, it looked like he was going to hamper it a little bit. It looked like I was surprised in a way that, you know, Boucher wants 12 forwards that can play. And no disrespect to Chris, but you've played 2 games in over 2 months. You're jumping into a playoff, the second round of the playoffs with a high rate of speed. How effective would he be at 3 shifts in the first period, at 4 shifts? I believe at the time he got involved in that altercation in back of the goal with Tanner Glass and all that. I believe that, you know, that's kind of the one way he made a little bit of an impact. I think he gave a lot of emotion to that bench, and he was helpful in terms of the crowd getting into it. I think that helped. You know, I don't know if he stays in the lineup. I don't know if on the road, you know, you're going to continue to go that way. Maybe they will. Maybe they need that deterrent, to combat the Rangers, who, you know, want to stay physical on the Senators, make it hard on them. But I was a little bit surprised that they went to him. I think at the end of it all, I mean, they won the hockey game. So he had somewhat of a positive effect.
We're talking to John Forslund of the NHL on NBC, who's been covering the Rangers, Senators. One guy who has had a tremendous impact on the New York Rangers franchise history is Dion Phaneuf. And what I'm talking about is a hit going back to his Maple Leaf days on defenseman Michael Sauer, December 5th, 2011, which resulted in Sauer suffering a concussion, thus ending his career. A lot of Ranger fans feel that if Michael Sauer was still around, the Rangers might have won the Stanley Cup that year against L.A. I don't know if Phaneuf has been that big of a factor in this series, and it seems like the Rangers have gone out of their way to hit him every single time he's had the puck. What have you seen out of Phaneuf in this series?
Not a lot. I think he's a good defenseman. I think at times he's been overrated. I think he can get under his skin from what I know about him a little bit, and I think that's what they're attempting to do. I think his partner's been really good. I think Cody Ceci, aside from Carlson, might be Ottawa's best defenseman in this series. So the second pairing of Phaneuf and Ceci have been pretty good. I think Ceci has a lot to do with it. Phaneuf's been okay. But I think, you know, that's just something that, you know, you want to go at. You know, the players know the personalities of guys. There's history over the years between, you know, one guy against the other. They know how to get to a guy a little bit. And if Phaneuf comes off his discipline, which he's been known to do, you can goad him into a bad penalty. But I just think he's been okay. I don't know that, you know, he's been a great player in the series. I mean, he's been effective. As most of their defensemen have been.
Yeah, I got to pose this question to Alain Vigneault during the conference call. Over the last 11 years, I've had the opportunity to cover Henrik Lundqvist. I always try to end my locker room interviews talking to Hank because I have found him to be one of the most analytic athletes I have ever had the opportunity to be around. He talks about overtime and the pressure to have to be so focused in overtime because one bounce can change everything. Then you go a little further and you look at Henrik's overtime playoff record, and it's the only place where Henrik Lundqvist seems to struggle. He's 11-19 lifetime in overtime. Do you think that maybe sometimes a guy who's that analytic could think too much in the overtime as opposed to just letting his natural game come to him?
Only he can answer it. I mean, the stats certainly look that way. You know, that it's funny. You talk to certain players, and they'll talk about opportunity, and they'll talk about, you know, trying to have fun and all of that. And Justin Williams is a guy that comes to mind for me because, you know, I've had a history covering him in his days with the Hurricanes, and also, you know, my coverage of the Stanley Cup playoffs over the years. I've done an abundance of L.A. games before he got to Washington. And, you know, here's a player, I think, that embraces situations like that. Of course, he's not a goalie. I mean, it's different for the goaltender. But a goalie's got to live in his own skin. You sign up for the position. You got to understand what it's all about, and you have to kind of work through it. I mean, I would never criticize, you know, Henrik Lundqvist for me. Because I think, again, you have to connect the dots before you get to a lot of the stuff that's just on him. Has he had his issues this season? Yes. Is he 35? Yes. Is that window closing on him? Yes. You know, if the Rangers don't do this and don't do it next year and beyond, does he become like a Dan Marino-type athlete where people always say, well, he never won anything? Doesn't mean they're not exceptional. But Williams was a guy who loves pressure, and it shows with all the Game 7 heroics that he's had in the three Stanley Cups that he's been part of. And I'll never forget, it was a conversation. They used to open up the locker rooms back in 05-06. They were a little bit more liberal with the media rules coming out of that canceled season. And before Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, the media were allowed to be down by the room around 5 o'clock and get some availability with players, and he was one of them. And he and I had a side conversation. He had this big smile on his face. I said, you know, Game 7, you know, a lot of pressure. And he looked at me, he goes, pressure? He said, oh, no, the worst that can happen is we lose. And he laughed. and they went out, and they won that game. And I think a lot of players will tell you that they want to be in a position to have that opportunity to make a difference and be a hero and love it and relish it. So I don't know. Hank, you know, if he you know, talks about that and maybe puts too much pressure on himself, maybe, you know, that someone can get to him and help him with that. But I wouldn't even know how to answer it because not being in his skin, that would be a tough one to read.
You know, on the flip side, Craig Anderson has been an amazing story for hockey this season. The 35-year-old goaltender took three leaves of absence from the Senators this season to be with his sick wife, Nicole, who's battling a form of head and neck cancer. He's been the backbone of the Senators team. He's not been outstanding in this series. He's gave up 17 goals in those first five games, being pulled after two periods in Game 4. Yet right now he finds himself one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. Round 1, he defeated Tuukka Rask, who has 30 career playoff wins compared to Anderson's 19. He's on the verge of sending Henrik Lundqvist, a sure future Hall of Famer, with 61 career playoff wins. You saw Cam Ward win against Martin Brodeur, Ryan Miller en route to the Cup. Does this kind of have that feel to it?
The records don't matter unless you win on that night. So he could be looking at no playoff experience, And if he has a shutout in Game 6 at Madison Square Garden and the series is over, that's all that's going to matter. So for me, he's got a very credible background. He's a very good number one goalie. He's never been an elite goaltender. Ward's performance as a rookie in 06, you know, came out of nowhere. He was the number two goalie that year. Martin Gerber was the guy that won the majority of the 52 games they won in the regular season. Gerber wasn't right the first two games of round one, was sick. They went to Ward in game three and never looked back, and he won the Conn Smythe. That was a Cinderella ride for him. So Anderson's more of a hardened pro, been around the block, has never gotten his just due in certain situations, has a lot of that personal stuff, you know, going this year, which is amazing that he's been able to play through it. He'll win the Masterton Trophy. There's no question about
it. Absolutely
right. And we can only hope that that situation gets better for he and his wife. But, you know, he's got the tools, and he's won in this building. Like, he's has a pretty good record in Madison Square Garden, aside from games three and four of this series. So I think he's comfortable in the environment, and when he's on, he's really hard to beat. He doesn't handle the puck well. The Rangers have done a good job in this series, putting him in positions where he's had a tough time handling the puck, miscommunicating with his defensemen, overhandling it, not handling it at the right times, fumbling it. You look for little cracks like that in the first period of Game 6, and then you take advantage of it, you know, as far as that's concerned. And then for Hank, I mean, this has been a there's been spectacular. I think the series, Mark, reminds me of his regular season, where you just, you know, you've got this oh, Hank is back type thing going in your head, and then all of a sudden there's game two, and then there's a little bit of yesterday, and you know, for me, I didn't like the winning goal. I mean, yeah. So you know, you look at that, and I think it's fair to say that it's been sporadic for Lundqvist. So, and it has been too for Anderson. Now, this series hasn't been dominated by goaltending, but that can change on Tuesday night too.
Two more questions, we'll let you go. You know, in baseball, Earl Weaver used to say momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. We've seen the Rangers bounce back from emotional losses in the past, but conversely, you can't continue to allow this to happen and expect to win a Stanley Cup. I know as a fan of the team, you know, it's very difficult, you know, to wipe those away from your memory. You've been around enough players over the years. How do they erase that from their memory? And if the game is close in the waning moments and, you know, Craig Anderson's pulled, does that start creeping into the mindset of a player?
Yeah, I think so. I think it does. But these guys are exceptional when it comes to mental toughness. I think, again, as fans, when we watch the games, we lose perspective on how good they are, all of them, no matter what the sport, and what the journey has been for most of them to get where they're at. Now, there's certain players who have, you know, this great ride through the amateur ranks of whatever sport it is, gifted to be in a draft position and entitled to their spot in the pros and so on, and it goes like that. But by and large, that's what I've loved about hockey over the years. And certainly in the playoffs, we see it, and you know this. Stanley Cup playoffs are about every player that's dressed for that game. And every one of those guys has a certain story behind it, and most of it is really hardened. And they've had to go through a variety of things just to get here. Just the elite are the ones, the Connor McDavids are the ones that get picked, and they're generational players, and it's, you know, you hit the ground running as a pro, and that's it. Most of these guys have toiled in the minor leagues. They've been cut. They've been in situations where they felt that it wasn't good. You know, they were wronged by some coach along the way, and then they rise above it. And within a playoff series, it's the same thing. So playoffs are all about getting hit, and getting off the mat, and coming back again without suffering that knockout. And most of these players, through and through, have tremendous character, so they're just going to keep buzzing, and that's why I think this series has been a lot of fun to cover. It's one that we can't tonight put a finger on, really, and I think that's why Game 6 has a lot of opportunity to be very special.
Moment of truth: who wins Game 6, and if it goes 7, who wins Game 7?
To be honest with you, I've got the Rangers winning 6. I think it's going to be hard for them to lose it. And then I'm going to tell you that in all fairness, you'd have to flip a coin in Game 7, because there'd be no way to think, even if Ottawa loses the game, you know, that all this momentum now is just going to be enough to carry whoever wins, you know, if the Rangers win, it's going to be enough to carry them in Game 7. They're going to still have to be really strong in a lot of elements of the games to get it done, you know, on the road in that building. But I like the Rangers in Game 6. I just have a feeling that they're going to be able to put it together. And if again, they get ahead of it, have a real quality first period, I think it's going to be very important.
All right, John, thanks so much for your time tonight. Look forward to seeing you Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden.
Okay, guys, my pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
You got it. John Forslund, voice of the Carolina Hurricanes and the NHL on NBC.